Today, instead of going to talk to you about Matthew, the 24th chapter, and the reason is because there are a lot of things that are going on. I'm not a person going to tell you prophetically what's going on. I'm not a person that goes into prophecy. But I think there is something that we have to kind of take a look at, and this is my own personal view. Actually, it's not so much a personal view. Is that sometimes when we look at prophecy, we have a vision that is predicting something in the future. When God speaks, it's nothing of Him making a prediction. And whenever time a prophet speaks with the Word of God, he is not speaking of something that is predicted to take place. He is telling the world, telling his audience, this is what God said He is going to do. So every time when someone comes up and claims to be a prophet, they're making a prediction. I'm sorry, they are a false prophet. Because God does not play games with His Word. And so when a prophet comes through and we have this, we need to be aware that the prophet is not trying to predict anything. The prophet of God tells you what God said He is going to do. A hard time, though. Many of us have excused and used some phrases which I hope to be able to come up with and you get familiar with. And Matthew 24, the reason why I'm going to Matthew 24 is because there's something very important that we need to pay attention to. What the prophet said word by word. And who's the prophet? Yahshua. And instead of trying to figure out or predict what he's trying to say, let's just find out what he actually did say and see whether or not we can say, is this something that's going to happen because he said so? Or is something that's going to happen because God said so? Because God said, I am going to bring it about. So before we go there, I'm going to go to Deuteronomy, the 28th chapter, and starting in 58, and it says, if you, talking to all the house of Israel now, remember it wasn't a divided house, if you do not carefully observe all the words of this law in the book of the Deuteronomy that are written in this book, Moses is writing this, that you may fear this glorious and awesome name, Yahuwah, your Elohim. What if happens if you don't? It says, then Yahuwah will bring upon thou and your descendants extraordinary plagues, great and prolonged plagues, and serious and prolonged sicknesses. Now our world may say, oh no. We bring this upon ourselves. God just allows it to occur. No, he says, I am going to bring it. And it goes on, says, I'm going to bring plagues of Egypt against you. I'm also going to bring plagues that is not written in this book against you. Is that a prediction? Or is that the action? It's the action of the Creator saying, I'm going to do this. So we have to get our picture in our mind. Fear, an awesome fear. And when we run into the prophets of this world, they don't seem to really get the picture of the awesomeness of the power and the glory. Now, we'll get into the word of glory of God's name in a little while here. But don't think of glory means something of, oh, it's great. No, glory means power, strength, forcefulness, determination. That's what it boiled down to. Okay. And sometime when we think if someone's got a disease or a plague, we might think, oh, well, that doesn't really affect us today. We have a country called the United States of America, right? This country is plagued with what? Prolonged, long diseases, prolonged and long sicknesses. And we are spending, what I said, 1/6 of our income, or is it 1/16th of income, what is it, on the sicknesses that are prolonging. It's occurring right now. We say, oh no, that's because of our eating habits. That's because our, God just allowing it. That's not what Book of Deuteronomy says. Because you have not listened to it and not responded to it, I am going to bring this about. Won't you believe me? Read it yourself. It's in Deuteronomy chapter 28. He says, moreover, I will bring back all on thee, all the plagues of Egypt, of which thou were afraid, and they shall cling unto you. And every sickness and every plague which is not written in the book of the law will Yahuwah bring upon thee until thou art destroyed. Wow. Now, sometimes in our modern Christian world we say, well, yeah, but Jesus came and he washed away all the diseases and the plagues and he just abolished it all by his life and his suffering and his death. Therefore, we don't have to worry about it anymore. Really? How come we have so many sicknesses in the United States of America? How about the rest of the world? Didn't Jesus die for them? Did he say that? What about the Christian world? You have people that you know who are very Christian and they're very, very sick. Oh, you mean? He wasn't referring to Christians? The Christians are the only ones that are free from any kind of disease, any kind of plagues, any kind of suffering? How many times do you people pray for your Christian friends, your Christian brothers, your Christian relatives, and the people you've known because they're sick? And sometimes their sickness is, what, last 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks? Or 3 or 4 or 5 years? Maybe 18, 19, maybe 20 years, their life. Now, remember what he did when he cast, when he took the people of Israel out of Egypt and put them into a place called bitterness? And the water was bitter. Do you know why he gave them that bitterness? Remember? To let them know, I am your healer. But see, we don't really accept that completely. Jeremiah 30, chapter 30. I'll go quickly. I went to Moses and I want to go into now Jeremiah. That's very something. The word of the Lord, Jeremiah chapter 30. The word of the Lord came unto Jeremiah from Yahuwah, saying, thus speak Yahuwah Elohim of Israel, saying, write these all in the words that I have spoken unto you in a book. For lo, the days come, says Yahuwah, I will bring again the captivity of my people, Israel and Judah, says Yahuwah, and I will cause them to return to the land which I gave them. However, verse 5, here's God said something. It's a plurality terminology. And he said, we have heard, or we have Shemanu. We have heard a voice of trembling, a voice of fear, a voice of no peace. Now, in the book of Jeremiah, do you remember what happened? What the story of Jeremiah? What was Jeremiah noted for? The northern tribe of Israel was already destroyed. And Judah was in the process of being destroyed. And it's God, the creator of heaven and earth, that brought the Assyrians against the northern tribe and he destroyed them. And Nebuchadnezzar was raised up. And he came and he destroyed Judah. You mean God really destroys his people? Yes, he will. I'll get to, you'll understand something here in a minute. Anyway, after he said this thing, I heard the sound, Verse 7, for that day is great, so that none is like it. It is a time of Jacob's trouble. Now, as we enter into what's called the Great Tribulation, the Christian world has a picture in their mind that it's really a worldwide tribulation. No, it says this Jacob's trouble. We'll narrow it down here so you can understand something. I want to give you an analogy. You know the book of Revelation that has to do with the woman? She's standing on what? The moon. What's she surrounded with? The sun. What's around her head? What are we talking about? Sun, moon, and stars? What? Moedim. Right? Everything about this world centers around the house of Israel. Everything. She, Israel, is in the midst of the appointed times. It's all about the house of Israel. Now, what did the dragon do? You remember what he did? He cast how many down? A third. Third of what?
Stars.
What stars? The ones around her head. He didn't cast a third of the angels down and he went with them. No. He cast a third of the house of Israel down. How many are there for the third?
Four.
Now he's still up, quote. And at that point in time, he's still up there. So he is out to destroy something very important, and that is the Moedim. Everything that surrounds. And you remember, she was, the devil tried to kill her and take it away for how many years? 3.5 years, right? No? Right. And then another statement came up. And you know what this is called? Time, times, and half a time. Do you know what that means? In Greek, it had to have the plurality of times a second time in there. Because that's the way Greek grammar has to be. How many times a year do you go before the Lord? Three. Three times a year. The first time is when? The second time is when? The last time is when? All right, but we only have a half of a one. Oh. Are there things happening in the fall feast that has a two-fold story? Yeah. Feast of Trumpets, the Day of Atonement. Then you have Shavuot. So now we have to understand what's going on. An event is going to take place, or is taking place, however you want to word it. We're talking about the days of unleavened bread and Passover. Then the next time, which is the second time, is Shavuot. And the counting. Remember the counting. And then there's a half a time. And people are trying to make it sound like that's also 3.5 years. No, we're talking time. We're talking seasons. That's what the picture of that 12th chapter is all about. It's the house of Israel within the Moedim. Everything is about that. What did God say? I have made the nations, given them their borders based upon whom? The sons of Jacob. Now you understand a little bit. I hope. We'll go to Jeremiah a little more here before we get there. I'll read something about Deuteronomy 31:17. And then my anger will be kindled against them in that day, and I will forsake them, and I will hide my face from them, and they shall be destroyed or devoured, and many evil troubles will come to them, so that they will say in that day, are not these evils come upon us because our Elohim is not among us? I begin to hear those sounds, by the way. There are an awful lot of people looking at our own country. And the question is, God's not with us.
That's true.
He is not. He is not standing up for America. He's not standing up for the philosophy or the Constitution. He's not standing up for the American people. And he's not standing up for the house of Israel, that is the nation of Israel today. His back is turned. He said he's going to turn his back. Listen carefully. Jeremiah 30, verse 11. Talk about the nations that are going to come against his people. He says, but I will, talking to Judah and Israel, but I will correct thee in measure and will not leave thee altogether unpunished. Thy bruise is incurable, and thy wound is grievous. There is none to plead thy cause, that thou may be bound up, that thou may have no healing medicine. For I have wounded thee with the wound of an enemy, with the chastisement of a cruel one, with the multitude of thine iniquities, because thy sins are increased. Should we fear the name of God? Or is this kind of like, oh, that's Old Testament, yeah. It happened to ancient Israel. It happened to, you know, it happened to Judah. But, you know, where we are today. And God says, why cry out? Why are you crying because of your afflictions? What's your problem? Thy sorrow is increased for the multitude of thine iniquities. We'll get to the word iniquity here in a minute. Because thy sins were increased, I have done these things unto you. Everything that is going to happen in this world is not because God allows us to fall into us. He puts us there. He corrects us. He disciplines us. But most of us don't think that way. They think God is love. God is merciful. God is kind. And He loves us. He cherishes us. And after all, Jesus did die for us. Therefore, He has more compassion. Since the diseases are gone or prolonged. By the way, the law is gone too, right? The law has no bearing on our lives, right? It disappears as well. So we don't have to worry about the word of the Lord anymore. And that's what's been taught. Now, there's one more thing I'll say before we get into Matthew. Very last, verse 34, verse 30. The fierce anger of Yahuwah shall not return until He has done it, until He has performed the intents of His heart. In the latter days ye shall consider it. Ooh. Ooh. Latter days. Latter days of what? Matthew. Matthew chapter 23. I've given you a kind of a background of what's happening. Verse 37. Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, that kills their prophets and stone them which are sent unto you. Oh, have longed to gather thy children together. But your house is desolate. It's not worth saving. There's nothing there. Nothing there, O Jerusalem. Why should I even think about you? Matthew 24. Opening statement. And you, Yahuwah, or Yahshua, went out and departed from the temple, and the disciples came to him to show him the buildings, plurality, of the temple. We all know it's plural, but listen a little bit carefully. Because, see, we have this thing that says See ye not these things, these buildings? Right? No, we talk about the temple, right? We talk about buildings. All the buildings that are associated with or connected to the temple will be destroyed. Give you an example in modern day. The Twin Towers. All seven buildings that were associated with them are destroyed. Gone. Ceased to have a stone on top of one another. Wow. Now we get a little... Sorry. There's some people who get really picky. And they say, we see that horrible, this word, winning of all, which is the West Wall. All stones are still on top of one another. It's not down yet. Come off it. Look at reality. It ceased to be. Now we say, oh, let's blame the Romans. Let's blame this. No, God said, I am going to destroy you, O Jerusalem. Why? Because you have not heard and responded to my law in the book of Deuteronomy. Should we not be a little bit more aware? Should we not be aware of what's going on in our own country, in our own people? In the latter days, ye shall consider it. We have a country now, a country that has thrown God completely out of everything you think of. And you can protest, you can pick up signs, you got, what, 60% or 70% of the people want, you know, the Ten Commandments, they want God's book. It's not there. It's gone. And it's never going to return. Never going to return. Is this God's doing? What did God say in Romans? Because you did not want to teach me about me in your educational system, I'm going to hand you over to a bunch of reprobates. Oh. Don't we have intelligent PhDs, Harvard universities, the Ivy Tower people in charge of our country? Aren't they the brilliant? Aren't they the smart? No, God says they are reprobate. Void of understanding. Period. Are we kind of in that world? Did you and I bring it upon them? You have repented and changed. But I want to say one thing for sure. When we get to the 24th chapter here, you're going to see such great devastation. And you will live through it. If you so decide to do so. There's a place in John. Don't have to turn there. I'm going to just read it. In John, the 12th chapter. And he says, here Jesus is talking. He says, Father, Father, glorify their name. And there's a voice that came down and says, I both glorified it, my name, and I will glorify my name again. When did God ever's name was ever glorified before? We always think of this, oh, when did the power, what's the first great power of the creator of heaven and earth ever do? To prove who he is. The flood. That's the glory of his name. That's the power of his name. He's just going to do it again. When do you think he's going to do it again? And it's coming. And the whole world can say, oh, I don't think it's really him. But he says over and over again, his prophets, you will know for sure then who I am. We always have this prophecy, and it says there, listen, I will not do anything unless I send my prophets ahead of time. Right? I won't do anything. Guess what I can do? I can sit down here in my chair, put my feet on my desk and say, okay, prophet, where are you? Nothing's happening. Bold world Lord coming. Oh, I'm sorry. Jeremiah is the word of the Lord. He did tell his prophets. He did tell Amos. He did tell Isaiah. He did tell Jeremiah. He did tell them. We, in our Christian world, are not interested in the prophets that he said, I will not do it unless I tell my prophets in advance. How much more does he have to tell you? How much more does he have to tell your people? How much part of it to tell the people? No, people don't pay attention to the prophets. But Daniel's going through some prophets. Fascinating. They speak the word of God. We have the prophets. The prophets are already there. If you're waiting for the two witnesses to come and say, oh, there's the two. Hey, it's already too late. Now, let's go back to Matthew. 24th chapter. Where am I at? Now, Matthew 24. I want to get to verse... Where am I at? I backtrack here. In Matthew 24, chapter verse 2, he said, surely you will see all these things, these buildings, verily I say unto you, there shall not be one here left, one stone left upon the other, that shall not be thrown down. They want to know, huh? When's that going to happen? Number one. First thing he said to him, he says, I want you to take heed to what I'm telling you. Oh, this is a prophet? Had not even God sent his prophet through his own son? Now, this is not good news in the 24th chapter. It is not good news. I'm sorry, it's not the good news. There's no good news of peace. What do we have? Good news, the talk of trembling, the voice of fear, the voice of cowardness, the voice of what? Uncertainty. People crying out to God. Like God said, in the latter days, you're going to say, is God with us? Is he among us? The answer is, no, he's not. And I'll tell you, any of you who are connected to the woman that's in Genesis, and not Genesis, in Revelations 12th chapter, whether you are, quote, one of the 12, in the quote, or you have joined yourself to the one, you are in the center of the appointed time. You are living within that point. What is that point in time? Everything in the Word of God centers around that picture. And the devil wants to stop the appointed time. He's unsuccessful. He doesn't succeed. Let's just take heed. Many will come in my name saying, guess what? Yeah, he's the Jesus. He's the Christ. He's the Messiah. What's going to happen? A lot of people are going to be deceived. What happens if someone is deceived? Now listen, don't ask. How many of you, when you finally realize you were deceived, what was your response? Oh, okay. Or was it anger? Right? Now, the problem with this is that when you go from that position, something else is going to take place. What's going to take place? Oh, you have been fooled. What's the natural reaction? Go against the one who has lied to you. And you start doing things you should not be doing. And pretty soon, there's going to be delivering. And we could be at fault with it. But listen, most of you are out of it for a long ways. There's going to be an awful lot of Christians who come to realize they've been lied to, and they're going to go after the liars. And it's not going to be good news for the liars. However, that's not what God wants them to do. And he says, many will do this. Many will do this. Not only in the United States of America, but I think around the world, and I think very strongly in the nation of Israel today. It's going to happen. Why does it happen? Because that's what he said is going to happen. Because he says he's going to bring it about. Because of his name. Because of him. And when they are offended, what happens if you have been offended? What's your first reaction? Chicken even. Right? I'm offended. I'm going to sock it to you. Ah! What does an offended person do? They begin to betray another person. That's what this thing's all talk about. What it says, you know, if you're offended, you're going to betray somebody else. Ooh. Have you been offended? You want to get even. You want to get somebody else in trouble. And guess what you do? You find somebody who will do it. We're living in a country now where a teacher in a public school can go up and literally curse and damn the creator of heaven and earth. But if that teacher stands up and glorifies the creator of heaven and earth, that teacher is fired and can face the judge and go to jail. Wow. Isn't that heavy? It's true. It's happening. Look at our own state of California. No teacher can dare stand up and teach his students or her students the truth about Creator of heaven and earth. They would be immediately fired and they'd be thrown into the courts as, I don't know what the charge is. They'll come up with one of them. I've got a slightest idea what it is. It was a thing of church and state. Violation of this. Yeah. And you go. We'll find you. We'll make a lot of money out of you. Verse 11. Matthew 12. I'm going through it pretty quick. Because I want to get to a point. He says here now. Many false prophets shall rise and shall lead many astray. Because of the abundance or the abounding of lawlessness, the love of many shall become cold. Why? Because thy sins are increased. Verse 13. He who endures the end will be saved. Saved from what? Now, this is very, very important. Saved from what? No! That's not what he's talking about. He's talking about the wrath of the creator of heaven and earth coming against what he said he was going to do in the book of Deuteronomy, and what he said he's going to do in the book of Jeremiah, and in Isaiah, and in Amos. And it's against whom? Jacob's troubles, Jacob's tribulation, the trials coming against Jacob, coming against Jacob hard. The Chinese going to feel it? Maybe, maybe not. God only corrects those whom he loves. Yeah. You know, his form of correction is really a piece of cake. No, it's hard, isn't it? We reach the 24th chapter here. I'm getting to the point where I want to go to.
He says this gospel will be preached to all the kingdom, and then what? The witness, and then something's going to come to an end. Number one, verse Matthew 15, 24, 15.
When you see the abomination of desolation spoken by Daniel the prophet, standing in the holy place, you read, let him see. Verse number one is this. Very next thing you must do is, then them that are in Judea flee to the mountains.
Oh, don't we have already thousands and millions, 20, 40? How many abominations of desolation? How many prophets? He is not talking about the stupid statue. He's talking about something different here.
What is going on? What is this thing that's going to take place? It's so frightening. He says, you though are in the housetop, get down and get out and don't bother your house. Run for your life. Neither him that is in the field, return back for his clothes. Run for your life.
Now, is that kind of like, okay, I'll leave in September.
Oh, there's a desolation. Oh, there it is. What's that desolation? Oh, it's that dome of the rock. Oh, that's a desolation.
Did they flee? Was there power? Was there danger? Was there anything for any reason for them to run for their lives?
No.
Didn't show up. Didn't even occur in the Roman Empire. So who is he talking to? Of course, he gets warning. You know, you with the child, it's going to be hard. You, the child, it's going to be hard. It's going to be difficult. And it's going to be difficult, too, if it's on a Sabbath.
Didn't you always say to Moses, tell the people that they will know that I'm God when I take them out of Egypt and take them to the mountain? And now he's saying, when you see the abomination in the temple, flee to the mountains.
Right.
Is it the same kind
of Judea? Flee to the mountains of Judea.
Judea, okay. Well, maybe it's not. But the anyway.
For then great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time.
Isn't that what Jeremiah said? Jacob's trouble never was ever since and never will be again. What's taking place?
Except those days be short, no flesh will be saved.
What, saved from what?
Gehenna, hellfire? These priests are running for their lives.
We say, oh, no, he's talking about something else. Jesus interprets, we've interpreted as being, well, saved from something, saved from, the second death, safe. We got salvation. Go and get yourself baptized. Get yourself out of the water. Quickly, when you see abomination, go get in the water.
Go get in the water and praise up. And you'll,
he said, go to the mountains.
He didn't say go to the water. He didn't say go to Jordan River. He didn't say to go get baptized. He said, run for your lives.
Do we believe that really can happen?
It says so. Do we think that Jesus is really talking metaphorically? It's a story that really isn't really a story. But we have Deuteronomy that says, yeah, I'm going to do this to you. We have Jeremiah that says, yeah, I'm going to do this to you.
Oh, wow.
Has God done that before?
Yeah.
Will he do it again?
We say, oh, no. Jesus is the Savior of the world. And then we have the book of Revelations. He is the commanding general of the first seal, the second seal, the third seal, the fourth seal, the fifth seal, sixth seal. I'll briefly hit those today. Because I think we have misunderstood something about them. And here at verse 25, so by the way, I told you this before. What did you tell me before? Take heed. Is when you say, when they're running for their lives in Judea, running for their lives into the hills, they're got people going to say, lo, the Messiah's over there. No, the Messiah's over here. No, the Messiah's hidden over here. What did he say? They're lying. You think they really are going to say, he says, immediately after the tribulation, that should have, immediately after the tribulation starts to begin. In those days, there shall be the sun be dark, and then the moon shall be and give off her light, and stars will fall from heaven. That's interesting. Moedim here. That's interesting. Moedim phrase. Huh. I wonder what he's talking about. They knew. They're still completely clear. Now, this is learn the thing of a fig tree. Verse 32. When its branches get tender, it puts forth its leaf, and you know something. What do you know? What? That summer is nigh. It's not that summer is near, or summer rather is now. Summer is nigh. So what time of the year do you start seeing the fig leaves bring forth tender leaves? In the springtime. So, kind of lets us know a little picture. Time, times, have a time. Get a picture. He's telling us the timing. The sun and the moon and the stars. Then he turns and says, by the way, a fig tree. You'll know then it's coming. What is it you know it's coming? Do you know what's coming? What's coming? Death and destruction. Tremendous amount of death and destruction. Remember the wine press of the Creator of heaven and earth, book of Revelations? It's death. And it is destruction. What? No, wait, God's for life! Well, we'll go back to Noah for a minute here. Because he uses Noah as a picture. We must listen very carefully to what he, Yeshua, has actually said. I believe Matthew really is a very good writer. He was a publican. He could write really good. He could keep records very well. Now, heaven shall pass away, but my words will not. But the day and hour no man knows. But, verse 37, but as the days of Noah were, so shall be the coming of the Son of Man. Oh, what happened during the days of Noah? And he says this, he tells us. He says, as in the days of Noah were, before the flood, they were eating and drinking and marrying and giving in marriage until the day Noah entered into the ark. Life was going on. What happened? The flood came and did what? He did what? Took them away. Listen carefully what he is saying. Who was left after the flood? Who was taken away in the flood? So when one is taken away and the other one is left, the one is left is whom? Noah people. The one is taken is dead. What it said, it actually took place during the time of Noah. It's not reverse osmosis. Well, I can use that terminology, it's a bad term, but you understand what I'm saying. Not reversing anything. He says, as it was, what happened then? Death. Destruction. Now, if you are the one, if you are in Judea, you're in that area, and you have the, and you're, and here you're, you down there, you're doing the field, the guy in the field, and he's dead, and you're alive. Wow. They took them away. Then there shall be two in the field. One shall be taken away, the other left. One taken away as those in the flood. Grinding the mill, one shall be taken, the other be left. The one taken away as the flood. Watch you therefore. This is a very important part, because this is where it gets very personal for me. This section makes it very personal for me. Watch you therefore, for you know not. Well, I'm coming. But know this, that if the good man of a house had known in which Which at what? Watch, what watch? Anybody talk about the watches? How many are there? Four watches in the night. The thief, he would not. He would have watched, and he would not have broken. Therefore, because this good man didn't know, but he watched, and the house wasn't suffering. Therefore, he says, ye also be ready for such an hour as ye think not the Son of Man is coming. Or, next verse, very important verse to me. Who then is a faithful and wise servant, whom his Lord, when he hath made ruler over his household, to give them meat in due season? This is what a faithful servant is supposed to be doing. Making sure you have the right food at the due season. Not off on some kind of weird tangent. You must preach and teach the Moedim in this due season, because it involves your life. It involves my life. It involves everybody's life who is connected to this tree. Blessed be that servant whom the Lord, when he sees, finds so doing. Verse 48, but if that evil and wicked servant says in his heart, my Lord delays his coming. Uh-oh. What is a leader supposed to do? What is a servant of the people of God? A servant of the house, not his household, but the household of the eternal creator of heaven and earth, his house. What happens if he decides to do something different? He becomes to smite. That's a really odd word. He attacks his fellow servants and he begins to eat and drink and who care less. That's what's got bad news for him, isn't it? Bad news for him. Revelation chapter 6. First one, just want you to listen to this for a minute. Very important. Now I saw when the Lamb opened up the seals, I heard one, which it means the first living creature is the lion, of the four living creatures say unto the voice like thunder, come and see. What do you see? And look and behold, a white horse, and he who sat upon it with a bow, and a crown was given to him, and he went out conquering and to conquer. Who's in charge? Who's in charge of the first horse? The lion is. What's the lion known for? No. What does a lion, what does a real lion do? But they prey upon the weak. They go after, they prowl, and they look and see, oh, that's the one. And they always surround a herd, they go after that one. Now, the Messiah is known as the what? Lion. Now, what does that put you in the picture? Is he going to be kind of like saying, oh, I got my battle, I got to fight for it? No, a lion doesn't fight for you. A lion does something. It goes after its prey. So when we talk about that Jesus is the lion, he's going to go after his prey. Who is he going to go after? Is he going to go after you? Or is he going to go after his enemy? He's going to hunt his enemy down. He's going to get him.
I'm just wondering, you know, the four faces of the cherubim, the leopard and the lion. How do you know it's the lion?
In the fourth chapter,
yeah,
it gives the order.
Oh.
Okay, it gives the order.
Okay.
And it says, now the second living creature, which is the calf, said, come and see. And another horse, fiery red, and granted to the one who sat upon it to take peace from the earth, and so on. So the people died. And then the next one, verse 5, chapter 5, verse 5. Then he opened up the third seal, which is the third one, which is the picture of a man, living creature, saying, "Come and see." And lo and behold, I saw a black horse, and he who sat upon it. By the way, where are these creatures living? Where are these four living creatures living? Around the greater heaven and earth. Right? Now, do you think they are bad creatures? They're carrying out the word of the Lord. Do you think these three so far are nice ones? Or are they destructing? Or are they taking lives? Are they in the realm of conquering and killing and doing bad things? Or are they trying to bring salvation to the world? I want to pay attention to this. It's very fascinating. After this third seal, then there is a voice. And the voice says something. Where does the voice come from? Oh, we're talking about the creator of heaven and earth. Now he says something that we must pay close attention to. Who is he talking to when he said this? Is he talking to the first horse, the second horse, the third horse? Or is he going to talk about the last one? The eagle. Very fascinating statement. I heard a voice in the midst of the four living creatures saying, a quart of wheat for a denarii, 3 quarts of barley for a denarii, but do not touch the oil and the wine. What on earth do you think he's talking about? First season is what? Second season is? All right. There is going to be a price on the head of those who are of the wheat, and there will be a price on the head of those who are of the barley. They're major renowned. A denarii. Worthless. Now, what on earth is the oil and the wine about?
Fall.
Let's get more specific. What's the oil used for?
Light.
To light the what? The menorah. What is the wine used for? Life. What life? Whose life? If you are the light of the world, you will not be a denarii worthless. You be worse. You cannot touch you. And if you are with Christ the life, then you have life. It is only two things listed here, however. Yes.
Those two.
Barley is known for the Jews,
right?
And wheat is known for the larger all the Engav, not the Engav, at the time of the Christian world, the ones who came in and joined.
Okay.
Now there's the wine and there's the oil. They have to picture something. We know the first two picture that. Yeah. The last picture has to picture another group of people.
Okay.
Doesn't say 144,000. We're not there yet. Daniel.
You have stated that a denarii being valued in that manner A denarii is a day's wage.
Right.
One day's labor. That's not worthless. That's a lot. I mean, I don't know about the rest of you guys, but if you work for a full day, what are you paid for? An 8-hour day shift, I mean, some of us maybe a couple $100, who knows? That's not cheap.
What's a quart? Full amount.
No, it's a very small amount.
Very small amount.
It's not that those items are cheap or worthless, that those items are exceptionally expensive.
Yes.
I've also understood that a denarii is the amount of money it takes for one day's food.
Well, we're only getting a quart of it. So it's not a full day's, it's only a fourth of a day.
Maybe one grain goes farther than the other one.
One fourth is not very much.
Even at that, if you just have enough money for just your day's food, that's not very much.
That's just how I see it. I'm looking at something totally different, and it's okay. Now the eagle came, and he does something. What does he do? Behold, a pale horse, and went out to kill with hunger and death, and even with the beasts of the earth. Now, we're talking these incredible seals, aren't we? Who's in charge of these seals? He handed it over. His son is a warrior. And he delegated his generals to carry out the commission. We already know the 124 already took off their crowns and submitted themselves unto him. All power, all authority, all might has been given unto me. Now, with this in mind, something about the fifth seal I want you to pay attention to. I saw under the altar the souls of those who had been slain for the word of Elohim and for the testimony which they held. And they cried out, and they said something. How long? And he says, not until a number of your fellow servants and your brethren are killed like you were killed is completed. Go back to sleep. Now, do you think that there are actually people who have actually believed in God, trusted in Yahshua, were they ever killed? Is this telling us that they're up there in heaven, floating around heaven? And no, it's telling we are here to look back. God says, I have not forgotten them. They will know. They're waiting for you. But you must be killed like they were killed. There is no running off into a never-never land speaking with the geese up there in the clouds. It's on this earth. Total destruction, power, and might. All right. I want to get one more comment. When the dragon knocked a third, four of those stars down, then a war broke out. After the destruction of four of the stars that are around this lady's head, then Michael goes to war. Then he casts the devil down. And his angels. The angels don't get cast down until after that scene takes place. I'm not a prophet. I don't plan to be a prophet. I'm just telling you what I'm looking at. I'm saying we have in this Christian world a belief system. And I want to try to focus in on something on the 12th chapter of Revelations that says, this is the house of Israel. She's in the midst of the appointed times. If you want to know, what did Jesus say? Salvation is of the Jews. They're in the midst of the appointed times. Joseph, house of Israel, is in the midst of the appointed times. Do you understand what I'm saying? So when you look at Revelations, when you look in Matthew 24, focus in on the Moedim. Because that's what it's all about. It's not a mystery. And we can have and know the mind of the Creator of heaven and earth. He so said so. We can begin to know what He thinks. We can know what He acts. The Bible is full of His actions and of His deeds. Everything that was called prophesied that came out of His mouth is not a prediction. It is, I'm going to do it. Period. And remember, what did He say about the new covenant? Who is He going to give it to, implant it into? Oh, a bunch of Christians. No. I'm going to write this into the mind and the heart of Israel and Judah. They're part of the Moedim. May God be with us. And don't forget, we need to pay close attention, because when the flood came, they were taken away.